From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome into this Tuesday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm, Neil McCready. I am back in Oxford, Clark Ford Studio. Neil is in Hoover. I will join him later today. Their SEC Media Day is kicking it off yesterday with Greg Sankey, Ed Orgeron, Brett Bielema, and Butch Jones. All the way kind of through there. Bielema, very, very entertaining as always. Made some Vegas gin jokes, everything up and down with Bert. Then all the way to Butch Jones, who is just a walking cliche after another. So you can read about that at rebelgrove.com. Sankey dodged the questions as expected. We'll mention that here a little bit in the opening. And today, basically just a lot of media interviews on the podcast today. We're going to talk with Tommy Dees of the Tuscaloosa News. We are going to talk to Ron Higgins at NOLA.com. We're going to talk to Antonio Morales, the Clarion Ledger beat writer for Ole Miss. And then, help me out, Mike Strange, Knoxville News Sentinel, Neil. What we'll basically do is go from one interview to the other, give you a taste of what's going on in Hoover at the Winfrey for SEC Media Days. And we'll do that all week in other podcasts. Tomorrow, we won't have a podcast on Thursday because of Ole Miss going so early. We'll probably recap that in some form when it's over and then get back at it on Friday. So that's kind of the plan for the week, the plan for today. So they're going to sound a little disjointed, but it's because of the way we're doing the clips. It's because of the way we are getting you information, but better than having a podcast at all. So get you a little bit of information there from SEC Media Days podcast, as always brought to you by the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford, Oxford Crystal, Oxford Exxon, $4.99 lunch specials, ribs. As I've been telling you, it's hot outside. Get the hand-spun milkshakes, chocolate, vanilla, strawberry, or Oreo. Also, the Kool-Aid slushes. Those are made with Sprite. They've got grape. They've got green apple there on Highway 6 West. And again, I'm coming to you from the Clark Ford studio.
Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900 is the number. ClarkFordInc.com is the website. You call a number, ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes and business hours. And then it's up to you. You can take our word for it that you're going to get the no haggling, right to the bottom line, great deal right off the bat at Clark Ford. And then you can go ahead and do what so many other podcast listeners have done, and we thank all of you for doing it, and that's let Clark Ford and Corey take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. That's one choice, or you can shop the thing around for a month and waste what's left of your summer. It's up to you, your decision. 662-257-1900. That's the choice you're going to make, obviously. And when you get through cutting your deal with Corey, right before you finish, say, hey, Corey, I heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. You can mention this podcast. You can mention the beer garden. Either way, $500 off the bottom line. Again, 662-257-1900 to call Clark Ford.
All right, a couple different topics before we get into these interviews. Greg Sankey yesterday, you, Antonio Morales, David Brandt, Ole Miss, beat reporters there in town to speak to him on day one on the Rebel Rags lawsuit. Sankey basically says, I don't talk about these issues. Not basically, here's the quote. I don't talk about lawsuits or infractions cases. That's just reality for me. And then on granting immunity to rival players, etc., however you want to put that. I don't know that I can answer that in this context without talking about matters. It has existed for years. It exists in a number of contexts. Certainly, it can cause troubling situations, yet the NCAA membership has viewed it as an appropriate tool for the enforcement staff. That's what's key. If there's a point of which the members of the NCAA said that shouldn't exist, then we need to change policies. That was a no comment, and then a no comment in about 75 words, where he did have a true statement. It was something that was agreed upon by the actual member institutions.
Yeah, I actually thought the second answer, the more I read it, I went back and read it six or seven times, the more I read it, the more I thought it was an answer. The first answer was a no comment.
Basically, it's his not, in his, what he was saying was it's not his decision.
Not his decision. Passed the buck. But he made the comment, and this is where Ole Miss fans, and I get it, I get the anger, I get the frustration, I get it. This is not a court of law. This is a bunch of academics This is a bunch of policy people. These are bureaucrats. This is the policy. This is the way. This is the process. This is the way they do these things. And everyone agreed to it. When you get mad at the NCAA, and I understand that, understand Ole Miss is part of the NCAA. It's a member institution. And so what I read in that was, hey, look, this is the way things get done. I understand that it can create problems, but, you know, right now, this is what's been agreed to. And what goes unsaid is that Ole Miss agreed to this. I didn't hear anything yesterday at all to indicate there's a, oh crap, deep-seated concern that this has been handled badly and it's going to explode. Not what I heard. And I know people talk about attorneys out there, and there are some really gifted, talented, powerful attorneys working in aspects of this case. They're not working in the NCAA portion of this case.
Yeah, Charlie Morkel does not get to talk in the COI.
He doesn't. I mean, unless they ask him to talk. And I don't foresee that. I totally understand the anger, the frustration, the feeling like you are being singled out, the feeling that you are a scapegoat. I completely understand it. I agree with a lot of it. Not all of it, but a lot of it. But I think Greg Sankey did answer something on that second answer. I do. I think he said something. I don't think it was a complete no comment. It was a wordy.
It's still a lack of giving personal opinion, but he was never going to give a personal opinion.
No. And people say, why didn't you ask in the main room? It's, well, two reasons. One, you don't want to give everybody else the information. You ask it in the main room, it becomes the domain of every person who's sitting in there. You lose any degree of exclusivity. And two, it wasn't the place. Getting him out in the hallway and in the lobby area where we got him was a far more intimate's not the right word. It was just a more relaxed atmosphere where you could get more of an answer. He's not going to talk about the specifics of an ongoing investigation. I hate to break it to you, neither is Hugh Freeze tomorrow, Thursday. No one does. So if you want to get mad at Greg Sankey about that, you got to get mad at everybody involved in this.
Yeah, he handled it either exactly how I thought he would handle it, or maybe gave a little more, even though, again, it wasn't what everybody wanted, but that was never going to happen. So
it's the standard cop-out. They're all copping out. Nobody has the balls, frankly, to stand up and go, this whole process is a joke. Nobody is willing to say, of course these kids get paid. We can't control boosters. These kids have their hands out. No one's willing to get into that. Why? Because it's, let's get real here, it's a moneymaker. Fans don't, we see it on our board all the time, and our board, rebelgrove.com, skews younger than a lot of our competition. They don't want that. They don't want to know. No one wants to know how the sausage is made. And nobody wants the people who make the sausage talking about how the sausage is made.
Yeah, it ruins appetite.
So, I'm not defending Greg Sankey here at all, but I'm keeping this thing real. If you're going to get mad at Greg Sankey for a no comment, well, then you need to get pissed off at Ross Bjork, at Hugh Freeze, at so many people. There's a whole lot of no commenting going on in this thing. Nobody wants to get real because getting real threatens the business. My opinion.
A lot of process talk.
Lots of process talk. You know, and Greg Sankey, you and I talked about this, and I'm going to keep this real too. We talked about this yesterday. Greg Sankey just finished a weekend in Birmingham where they brought, I don't know, 50, I think.
I don't know the number, but a lot.
It was football, men's and women's basketball, I think, players.
Basically a student advisory committee or something.
Yeah, they brought them to Birmingham for the weekend. And they brought the cream of the crop. They brought Shea Patterson and kids like that. We made fun of the kid, but a year ago it was the Dobbs kid from Tennessee, who's a really bright kid.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we did make fun of the rocket building and stuff, but let's face it, that kid, Josh Dobbs, is a really
anybody would like Josh Dobbs to be their son. So, yeah.
And if football doesn't work out for Josh Dobbs, something will. If football doesn't work out for Shea Patterson, something will. Shea is charismatic. He's smart. He's personable. He's able to carry on conversations in multiple settings. Those kinds of kids were what was in Birmingham over the weekend.
Yeah.
So forgive Greg Sankey if he gets a little idealistic about it. They weren't bringing the kids, and they're on every program in the SEC who, if it weren't for athletics, would have no spot on a college campus. If it weren't for athletics, things would be really scary. He didn't have those people on.
Now, you can make the argument the commissioner should understand those people as well, that skewing simply to the 1% is as dumb as anything else, too. But
fair enough.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, he looks at those kinds of kids and thinks college athletics, man, it's just we're changing lives, building character, and they are. But it's not some across the board deal.
Yeah.
So I don't know where this thing is going. I think the people that are expecting fireworks this week, these bombs to drop, I don't know what that's all about. I think there's a better chance that Ole Miss gets hammered and an investigation gets launched into Mississippi State than there is that Leo Lewis's testimony gets thrown out. My opinion. I could be wrong, and I'm guessing off 20-something years of kind of covering college athletics. In my opinion, the odds of the NCAA investigators in this case abandoning Leo Lewis as a witness and thereby throwing out the overwhelming majority of the second NOA are really slim.
Well, no, it wouldn't be the investigators. It'd be the COI disregarding testimony. I mean, I'm agreeing with you. I'm just talking protocol-wise.
Yeah. And that's possible. At the hearing, Ole Miss makes a compelling case that Lewis is not believable.
And three private sector people and some other people that aren't involved in the NCAA process go,
Yeah. But to do that, you have to look at the NCAA investigators in this case. And frankly, the enforcement staff, because these people have not worked. They've not worked without oversight. There are people over them who have approved of their methods.
Yeah.
So you have to look at those people in the eye and say the majority of your 4-year investigations of fraud, we're throwing it out.
Yeah.
Right, good luck.
When you do that,
the message that, because this is all about sending a message. The message that gets sent is, man, you are the defanged snake.
Couple things quickly before we get into interviews. And again, we'll close the podcast with a lot of interviews. So hang in. We're talking to a lot of people, four different media members. Ed Orgeron, quiet but good day yesterday. I thought he really handled the Ole Miss question well yesterday. Says, quote, "Very grateful for my time at Ole Miss. Had a great job, a job in the SEC, was given a great chance. I wasn't ready. I went there as offensive line coach. I did the things that I did as offensive line coach and was very successful over the years. It didn't work at Ole Miss, although I recruited well. The day I left Ole Miss, I looked at myself. I called my mentor and said, hey, there's things I have to change. I'm going to be a head coach again. There's some things I got to change. I need to find out why I was not successful. We dug in. I went to see different coaches. We dug in and watched different people. Went and talked to some mentors of mine. Here's two things I came up with. Number one, I was going to treat the team exactly how I treat my sons, no different. And I was going to treat every coach on the coach's staff with respect and let him coach his position as he knew it. Ever since those two minor changes, they weren't minor. We've been 12-4, so that's the difference. I don't know if he's going to do it or not do it, but I thought just from a media day stance, he was pretty good yesterday.
Well, I talked to several LSU people. You'll hear Ron Higgins. I taped it, the conversation I had with him for the podcast, but I talked to some other guys as well. And there are differing degrees of certainty about this, but to a man, they all say he's a lot different than he was at Ole Miss. That he's learned that you can't be the crazy defensive line coach. That won't work in the quarterback room. That won't work in the wide receiver room. That won't work with all of your coaches. The offensive coordinator can't go throwing stuff all over the place. There's got to be you can have the crazy D-line coach, but he's the crazy D-line coach. He can't be the norm. And I think that's all he knew, frankly, from talking to some people yesterday who know Orgeron pretty well. I think he thought when he interviewed for the Ole Miss job back in, what was that, 2003?
2005. Late 4, early 5.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I lose. Sorry.
His first season was 2005.
Yeah.
So late 2004.
I'm not an Ole Miss historian. Thank you. When he interviewed for that job, I think he thought he was getting some interview experience. Talking to people who know him, I think he thought he was getting interview experience. I don't think he at any point really thought he was getting the Ole Miss job until he got the call that he was getting the Ole Miss job.
Right. Here's $820,000 or whatever it was. Have at it.
I mean, I literally think, Chase, from talking to people yesterday who know him well, that he had about 24 hours notice to realize, oh, my God, they're hiring me. Wasn't prepared for that job.
Last thing before we get to the interviews, we got a couple minutes. We'll get to those in a second to not have a two-hour show today. Home Run Derby last night. We've been joking about giving them aluminum bats, all that stuff. There were balls over 500 feet last night by Aaron Judge. I think Stanton had a couple 490 to 500. Just bombs.
Yeah.
I found this from 2006. This is a Penn State study from 2006, and they studied wood bat versus aluminum bat. The average exit speed on a wood bat in their dry testing, meaning not on a field but in a controlled setting, was 98.6 miles an hour exit speed.
Okay.
Good exit speed, nothing crazy, but good.
Yeah.
Same people, same mechanism, however they did this, when the aluminum bat was 106 miles an hour.
Ooh.
So an 8-mile-an-hour difference on average or however they did it, top 10% maybe is what they were doing. Between the aluminum and a wood, start extrapolating that out a little bit. We would have had some balls last night that would have flirted with 575, 580.
Some balls that I guess if you take the back windows out, that would have left the park.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It'd be probably another 70 to 80 feet is a guess.
Judge hit something, man. Holy cow.
Yeah.
By the way, did you know that he had 25 D1 football offers?
Did he?
Oh, man. ESPN. They can't just let the story be the story. All of a sudden, he was a 3-sport star who had to pick.
Yeah. Oh, he's, man.
Can't just be a good enough story.
Yeah.
He became a superstar last night. If you're a baseball, you're thrilled. Yankee, young, on a Yankee team that's full of young players, getting good together.
Omen, and not a joke towards you, but with the Cubs struggling so much, they needed it right now.
Sure.
So.
Sure. No, it's
the Cubs were supposed to still be the story.
The Cubs have this young nucleus that's struggling right now. I mean, who knows what's going to happen in the second half. I'm not particularly optimistic, but you've got that Yankee team that's got a young nucleus. The Dodgers are super hot right now. Clayton Kershaw having a historic season. There are a lot of marketable people in that sport. And for Judge to perform the way that he did last night and win the thing, it's good for the sport. I mean, it's not the NFL, and I don't know that maybe it can ever get back to that level again, but they're having a nice little run.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be the NFL to be a success. So
Yeah, they're making money hand over fist. They just need some names they can market. What's interesting is for the longest time, everyone thought in a year, you know, Bryce Harper's under contract this season and next season. Everyone thought that in November, December of 18, the Yankees would throw a gazillion dollars at Bryce Harper, and they might still. But they might not have to. Yeah. You know, guys like Judge and some of the kids they have coming up in their system, it might make more sense to do some other things with that money. So there's this, I don't know, he's the guy that I don't know how he would lose a home run competition. He still had home runs left in him yesterday. Like Miguel Sano, who had a fantastic night, he was completely out of gas when it was over, like just done.
Yeah.
And Judge looked like he could have gone two or three more rounds. Effortless.
Your stat for the All-Star game tonight, Chris Sale and Max Scherzer, your starting pitchers, they have a combined 351 strikeouts this season. That's the most ever entering the All-Star game by the game starting pitchers. 351.
They've both been fantastic. The Cy Young race between Kershaw and Scherzer is going to be fun.
Yeah. So, all right, a lot of interviews coming your way. Again, we will lead it off here with Antonio Morales, Clarion Ledger beat writer, and move on from there. The interviews will close the show today. So thanks for joining us this morning, and we will be back with you tomorrow. Here's the interviews, starting with Antonio Morales on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline.
The podcast is also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you're a small business owner, you know Visa's rules recently changed, allowing owners to pass credit card processing cost onto their customer as a line item along with sales tax. Journey Business Solutions has a fully integrated solution to make that simple for business owners. You just swipe the card just like you do today, and you pay zero for credit card processing. Journey Business Solutions also has the latest and greatest technology with Apple Pay, EMV chip processing, next day funding, and more. If you're ready for something more than the terminal, Ben Brown and team has a tablet point of sale system that does inventory, marketing, loyalty rewards, employee scheduling, and time cards. It makes your life much easier. It normally costs $1,200, but if you let Ben know you heard about it on the podcast, you get it at no cost and still save monthly versus what you are paying to process today. Journey Business Solutions can do business nationwide. They often work with merchants previously declined and can get you out of your contract. Send Ben an email at benbrown@journeybizsolutions.com. The process is very easy, and he will get back with you right away to get you started. The podcast is also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based RE/MAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than four decades, and no one knows the residential and condo market in Oxford better than Harry. Go to his website. He'll prove it to you. It's harryalexander.com. Click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab. Filter through by what you're looking for. The results are updated daily. You see what you want, and then send Harry an email. He'll take care of the rest. It's ha@harryalexander.com. The podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, look no further than Grenada Nissan, just off Interstate 55 in Grenada, Mississippi. They have a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles, fabulous lease deals. There's great service after the sale. It's an easy car buying experience. You can take my word for it. I've done it. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. Now back to the show. Antonio Morales covers Ole Miss for the Clarion Ledger, kind enough to join me here in Hoover. Antonio, earlier today, I guess people will hear this on Tuesday, so earlier Monday, we talked to Greg Sankey.
Yep.
We asked questions about immunity, about the Ole Miss case specifically.
Rebel rags.
He didn't say much.
Yeah. Just in regards to the Rebel rags, he doesn't talk about lawsuits or infractions cases, so they kind of went that right away, any kind of follow-ups. And then in terms of immunity, he just said, hey, it's something that's been going on, and until the members really complain about it, it's going to be here to stay. So he kind of stood by the use of it, from what I gathered. Just kind of what did you gather just from?
You know, it's funny because I took from it what I've kind of long thought for a while, which is this belief that the people around the process are going to bail on the process because of some lawsuits
Yeah.
is
is illogical. Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean those lawsuits aren't legitimate. It doesn't mean that that might not result in some damages and that type thing. But I think the fans out there, and I think it's just fans. I don't think it's the administration or the program. But I think the fans out there who are hoping that some lawsuits are going to change the course of this NCAA thing, I suspect they're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, they're 4 years deep into this thing already. Like, you don't see them or imagine them bailing now. This, I mean, they've invested so much time, so much effort, the use of immunity. So it would go against kind of every, it would reverse course it for everything they were doing for the past 4 years to just bail now. So that's hard to imagine them doing that or even retracting stuff or doing stuff like that.
Dan Mullen will be here tomorrow. Two of the players on his team are named in that lawsuit. Yeah. Greg Sankey was asked today. I think it stands to reason Dan Mullen will be asked tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
What's your anticipation for what type of answer he'll have?
I think he'll probably have the same kind of answer as Sankey, where he just doesn't say much. And what's there really for him to say? Or what's the benefit of him saying anything about those cases? I know he'll probably be asked about, rejecting Ole Miss's request for an interview during the process. He'll probably be asked about Leo Lewis and Kobe Jones being sued and the use of immunity and stuff like that. But I just don't see the benefit of him answering any of those things.
You know, he's in a funny spot to me, that whole program is, because if the NCAA, and I've said this for a while, if the NCAA takes Leo Lewis as a believable witness, right, he says, well, I took money from another school too.
Yeah, where does that put?
You know, that obviously, I say obviously, it would be logical that the school he's referencing is Mississippi State. Does the NCAA then launch an investigation into Mississippi State? And if you're Mississippi State and you know that the NCAA is taking him as a believable witness, what do you do in terms of putting him on the field?
Yeah, and that's what I asked Michael McCann when the Rebel Rags lawsuit stuff came out. I just said, you know, what kind of, how much does it cover immunity? And, you know, the main thing he said, it's, you got it, like, and we can't see it. What was the immunity agreement between, you know, Leo Lewis and the enforcement staff? Like, what did it actually cover? And I don't think anybody's seen it, so we don't really know what it covers. And so does that mean, hey, you're fine no matter what? Like, so I think it kind of comes down to that. And, they're just in that, he's just in that weird spot because, I mean, it's hard to believe, you know, like what everybody always says, you know, he took this money from Ole Miss and he didn't go there, so what did it take to get him to where he eventually went to? So, it's a weird spot for them.
You think Mullen just avoids it completely tomorrow, though?
I think he just gives no comments, basically, just says, hey, I can't talk about it, but that's what I'm expecting for Mullen on Tuesday.
Hugh Freeze will be here Thursday. What's kind of your general anticipation for his mood, his tone, how frank he is or how much he avoids the topic? Because I've already heard several national media people come up to me and ask, you know, what's it going to be like? And it's clearly going to be the topic of conversation.
Yeah, I mean, that's the topic of conversation right now, just with the whole program. So obviously he's going to face his questions from it. Like, you know, local guys like me and you, like, what's more for us to really ask right now?
I'm almost out of material.
Yeah, like, so I don't, like, I've been trying to think, like, what more can we really ask him when we get the chance on Thursday? And he hasn't spoken much since the response came out. So we come up with questions, you know, regarding that. But we've asked him so much, like, since February, you know, during spring ball, just about the investigation. So I don't know how much more the local guys can ask. I think the national media will ask a lot. And obviously they're not around the program every day. So I think that's going to be a big topic for them, which he'll face. I don't know how much he'll face it from just in terms of, you know, the local gathering when he has that before. But, I think it's going to be obviously the big topic of the day, and especially for the players. I think the players will probably get hit hard with it too, especially, you know, a guy like Shea and those guys.
Speaking of the program, what are your expectations for 2017? You've been around this team a lot last year, a lot in the spring. What do you think about this team?
I think I can always tell everybody, you know, anywhere from 5-7 to 7-5, you know, just depending on how the breaks kind of fall. I think they should be better last year defensively, because you know they can only go up pretty much. You saw how that defense was playing against Vanderbilt and Mississippi State at the end of the year. A lot will depend on the health of the defensive line, I think. There's not much depth behind, you know, Benito and Breland Speaks. And, you know, those linebackers need to improve drastically. Offensively, they should be fine. You know, Shea and the other receivers will be explosive. So anywhere between 7-5, 5-7. So probably my answer is like 6-6, you know, 500 around there.
Chase and I both said 6-6 when we got pinned down, so that you're in great company. How much do you think the NCAA thing looming over at least the first half of the season impacts the players?
You know, it's hard because they're always going to say, oh, it doesn't impact us. You know, we're just focused on that. But, I mean, say there's the possibility they do get hit with a two-year bowl ban. You know, they got to be thinking, hey, do I want to be here? Like, the assistants might think that, too. Just what's our future like? And when you start thinking about that stuff, that takes away from you thinking about the game, and that's going to be hard when you're facing Alabama and Auburn in September and you don't know what the future of the program is.
Yeah, it's something that hangs over them. I mean, if it's they're worried. I mean, if it's a two-year bowl ban, what do I do? And then on the flip side, you sit around, and if it's a one-year bowl ban, it's almost a sense of relief.
Yeah.
But do you lose your intensity? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. People say, well, it won't impact the season. I don't see how it doesn't impact the season. It doesn't mean it impacts it negatively. It doesn't mean it impacts it positively. But it's there. It is going to have a say in what happens.
Yeah, it's there. It's not going away. Maybe until November, October, whatever. But it's definitely there, and it's something that everybody has to think of. Everybody that covers it, everybody that's involved with the program. It's something that's just there. It's like a black cloud over that program. And it hasn't gone away for 4 years, and it's still there. And I know they obviously wanted to end it soon.
Were you devastated when Paul George got traded to the Thunder? Because obviously Oklahoma City is kind of a dream destination for him, and that probably kills the Laker dream.
The Lakers dream is still alive. I think those OKC players are just going to migrate to LA once the season's over. I know that's your worst fear. But
it is my worst fear.
But that's what might happen, man. You never know.
Finally, your Dodgers are 700 games over 500 here at the break. It's kind of like the Cubs a year ago. It's World Series or bust now?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a World Series or bust. Clayton Kershaw already has 14 wins. You know, who knows, he might win 25. But, I think it's World Series or bust for them. Because, you know, with the Cubs out, you know, it just seems like the prime opportunity. Well, if the Cubs are out, I know they still have a chance to make a second round.
They look out.
But if the Cubs are out, then, you know, it's like, who else could really... Do they could really challenge the Dodgers? Like maybe the Nats.
The Nats, if they address their bullpen.
Yeah, but I think if the Cubs don't make it, I think the Dodgers. The Dodgers have to make it this year.
So, is this your first SEC Media Days?
Yep, first one.
Oh, it is. We should have started there and buried the lead. I'm sure you've heard magical stories about the Media Days and Hoover and stuff so far. How has it lived up or not lived up to your expectations?
Well, I mean that 40-minute Greg Sankey state of the conference has kind of made me sleepy, but everything has been okay so far. You know, nothing too dramatic. Maybe when like Alabama or something comes, it'll be interesting to see the fandom. But so far, so good.
Have you made it to On Tap yet?
Yeah, last night, Sunday night.
What was your beer of choice?
I had a Beta and a Gator, then a couple of Modelos.
So you had to get back to the California roots quickly.
Yeah.
I got you. All right, Antonio, appreciate the time. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Let's take a break in the interview to tell you about MasterCuts and their new partnership with Spray South to provide customers a new service everybody's been asking for, starting immediately skeeter beaters ready to eliminate those pesky mosquitoes that prevent you from enjoying your back porch every afternoon and the 28 diseases that they carry. Skeeter beaters vows to provide the same great customer service its parent companies are built upon. The product's designed to last 3 to 5 weeks depending on the weather. They offer single application pricing starting at $60 as well as seasonal packages. They serve all of North Mississippi, so if you're in Grenada, Olive Branch, Tupelo, Amory, or anywhere else, give Skeeter Beaters a call, 662-607-7773.
The podcast also brought to you by Captain John Fryer and Tuna Chaser Charters in Biloxi. John handles inshore and offshore fishing expeditions from 4 to 12 hours. He knows where to put you on the fish that you want to catch. This time of the year, snapper and cobia are the most popular trips to take.
The snapper season in Mississippi waters runs through Labor Day 2017. Another popular trip for visitors that don't have as much time is the inshore trips for speckled trout and triple tail. You can reach John through his website, tunachasacharters.com, his Facebook page, or you can call John at 228-348-7817. The podcast also brought to you by 7 South Tailgating. 7 South, owned and operated by Kyle and Jordan Thornton. 7 South Tailgating is equipped with the largest staff in the Grove that can service most any of your tailgating needs. They offer SEC only and full season packages, rental packages, or they can set up your gear wherever you want it set up, on the Grove, the Circle, or on the outskirts of campus. 7 South typically sells out for every game, so visit their site today to secure your spot. If you give 7 South a try for one season, you'll never tailgate without them again. The site is 7southtailgating.com, and you can reach them by cell at 662-321-1682.
A month worth of podcasts out of this thing.
Tommy Dees of the Tuscaloosa News joins us here on the podcast. Another year and another SEC Media Days, and another year where Alabama is the prohibitive favorite in the SEC. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think the gap is widening. I think I was discussing with somebody. I'm old enough to remember the late 1970s when it was kind of Alabama and everybody else in the SEC. Not that Alabama win the national championship every year, and just not, they're not going to win it every year now. But I think the gap's wider than it was 5 years ago between Alabama and the rest of the SEC. There doesn't seem to be, this past year and looking at what I expect this year, that second or third place team. You know, a few years ago, Arkansas was kind of in the mix for the national title if everything had fallen right late. And LSU has been, and Auburn has been. Nobody from the East lately. Florida was for a long time.
But yeah.
I don't see anybody like that right now.
No, a couple years ago, Ole Miss was probably the team that was closest to them, and then they've fallen off. No one can maintain it with any degree of consistency the way that Alabama has.
No, absolutely. You know, Ole Miss beat Alabama twice in a row. It's a big feather in Ole Miss's cap, but it doesn't look like. And that's one of the things that's really amazing about how Alabama's run right now. As you look, and you know, Ole Miss has a couple of up years, and they're kind of out of the picture. Remember when Oregon was a big national player? Remember when Texas was winning 10 and 11
sure.
games? I don't even know if Texas is still in Austin. I haven't seen them since then. Remember when Oklahoma was? I mean, all these teams have had their, you know, at the top with Alabama.
Texas has moved to Fort Worth, by the way.
I thought that might have happened. But all these teams have kind of had their time at the top with Alabama. You know, Ohio State's probably the one that's stuck the most, but still wasn't quite there. Florida State's been close, but it hasn't. We'll see this year. Maybe they're back in that. But Alabama's just kind of in that mix every year.
As you know, I worked in this state for about a dozen years. And in those years, I mean, Alabama had a couple of really good years. Mike DuBose had a special season. Gene Stallings had a special season. But they weren't like this. This is a different thing, what Nick Saban is doing. I want to get into, remind me to go back to my Golden State Warriors analogy in a minute. But we'll start here with Saban. Is he at a point where his numbers are pushing a certain someone to number two on the Alabama all-time list?
I think that he's pushing for number one.
That's what I'm saying. Is he pushing Bryant to number two?
Yes, he very well could be. I think he needs another national championship or two. Bryant had six, and you got to get that number somehow. And, of course, he has one at LSU. So we're not quite sure if Alabama fans completely accept or recognize that one yet. But, yeah, he's had a longer period of dominance. Now, the difference is, Bryant reinvented himself. He was great in the 60s and it kind of fell off, and then he came back and he was great in the 70s again and was a dominant program. But what Saban has done is kept Alabama dominant without really. The low point after his first year was a 10-win season when in November they were still in the national championship.
I'm a big NBA guy. Watch a lot of it. I found myself last year less interested in the NBA at times because mm-hmm. there was there was not as much suspense as to, you know, who's going to win. It was like, well, unless the Warriors get hurt. In fact, the only time that the season got interesting was when Kevin Durant got hurt. There's some people have commented today is a little different buzz, and of course today's the first day and there's not a lot of sexiness in today, but there's less buzz this year. And I've said, well, it's because there's a feeling around the league and the people that cover it that it's Alabama's to win. I know in Tuscaloosa that's good for the league.
Right.
Around the rest of the league, and you're smart enough to see it from a big league perspective, is Alabama's absolute dominance a good thing, or do we need someone to pop up and challenge them, beat them occasionally to change the narrative?
Oh, I think it's better when there are other teams that are good enough to look them in the eye and you know, trade punches with them. I mean, Georgia in that SEC championship game just a few years ago, where it comes down to the last drive and they're 5 yards short. Now they're 5 miles short compared to that. But Ole Miss being able to beat out, I think it makes for a better league, and I think it also pushes Nick Saban. You know, I think Alabama people might not say they'd like that, but you know, of course they want to win every game and win them all 42-0. But when you're getting pushed and you know you've got to, it keeps those players, you know, locked in, and it keeps them working on the road recruiting to get more of them. So yeah, I think it's better for the league, and it is a better league when there are, you know, what I think's the worst is when there's and this hasn't been the case lately, but when you got a league where there's no real good top team and you got a bunch of 8 and 9 win teams and somebody gets to win it, that's not good for the league, because you need that top contender spot. But it's better when you've got 3 in the top 10 or 3 in the top 7 or something like that. And no, you know, even a couple of years ago, not that they really were that, but Mississippi State with Dak gave the illusion of being that until they ran into Alabama.
You saw how good he was.
Yeah, you saw how good he was, and you knew he was good enough that in the right circumstances on the right day, he could beat anybody. And he's showing that now. You know, Deshaun Watson was that guy for Clemson 2 years in a row that, you know, he played great games against Alabama. He did everything he could do but beat them the first time, and then he beat them. So, you know, hats off to that.
Those two games, you got a chance to see them up close and personal. Now that you've had a time to reflect on them, Alabama wins. Frankly, I think Alabama wins the one that Clemson outplayed them, and then vice versa. I thought Alabama was better than Clemson last year, and yet Clemson found a way to get it done. Now that you've had a chance to think about those two games, where do they stack up just in sort of college football lore as games you've seen and how good they were?
Yeah, I mean, the national championship games that I've seen, Texas and Southern Cal comes to mind. They were that caliber. That's the only one I can think of that was really like that. Those two were great football games, and you could feel it. It was electric, and you knew all the way up to the last play. The first game when Alabama won, the score was a little deceivingly close because Clemson came down and scored very, very late to get close. But you also knew if Clemson got the onside kick, anything could have happened, much like Alabama and Ole Miss. I think, you know, last time around, I think you give Ole Miss one more shot at that ball, and Alabama's defense was worn out.
Crazy play in that game. If you take a freeze, someone got a picture, I think it was AP, and I've laughed about it because no one talks about it because it didn't happen. But Ole Miss had closed within a score, and Bo Scarborough fumbles. And there's a photo of the ball in midair, and Scarborough's eyes are not on it. And you think, wow, if that ball gets recovered, who knows what happens? You know, and of course, Bo recovered it himself, I think. And,
right.
And then Alabama ran the clock out, and that was that.
Yeah, but Chad Kelly, I mean, at that point, he was on fire. He was going to win that game if he got another shot with it. But, you know, not with 4 seconds left on a Hail Mary, but you give him enough time, which he would have had minute-ish, I would have my money would have been on Ole Miss. But, yeah. But getting back to Alabama, Clemson the second time around, I agree. I think Alabama outplayed Clemson for the most part, but Alabama kind of got worn down on defense. There's the Achilles heel. If you can play the up-tempo, keep that defense on the field for that 90 plays, which means you got to convert a lot, and that doesn't happen with everybody who tries to play up-tempo. You got your shot. You got to get them in a shootout. It's the only way to beat them.
So Ed Orgeron was here Monday. He talked, I thought it was interesting. His presentation for the most part was pretty boring, but I thought he said a couple of interesting things. Said that the way you close the gap with Alabama is to go recruit the same kind of players they're recruiting, which is obvious. And then he talked about Matt Canada, and he wasn't talking specifically about LSU versus Alabama, but let's get real. That's to win the West, you got to go through them. He does run a lot of up-tempo. He does some confusion things. Is Orgeron at least theoretically on the right path?
Yeah, if he gets a quarterback who can run that. And, you know, I can't remember the last quarterback that, and I know that's a previous administration, that LSU actually recruited and developed. you know, they've had the drop-in quarterback, Mettenberger, but he wasn't their guy. He just landed there. But you got to have somebody to run that. But, yes, he said it. I know as a coach at LSU, I have to beat Alabama. And I don't think he wanted to say that because he kind of tried to talk around it, but he eventually just came out and said it. Well, that's the problem everybody else in this league has, is that's what they're being measured against. You know, well, Will Muschamp right now is not measured against that, but eventually, you know, you got Florida, you got to beat Alabama. Ole Miss, you got to beat Alabama. They've done it a couple of times. Mississippi State, you got to beat Alabama. Auburn, you better beat Alabama. LSU, you know, now is, what is it, they lost 5-6 in a row?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, you know.
Everybody keeps hyping the rivalry, yet it doesn't feel like much of a rivalry lately.
Been some good games, but Alabama keeps winning them, starting with the rematch. You know, they won the game of the century, LSU did, and Alabama's won everything since. So, yeah, that's the problem of being in the SEC, is you're going to be measured against that, and you're going to have to find ways to try to beat them. So LSU really has had the type team to beat Alabama and the old Alabama. The smash mouth, we can put our defensive line against your offensive line and keep this thing 10 to, you know, 7 to nothing, 7 to 3 and stuff, and that's not the way to beat Alabama anymore.
Last time we saw Alabama, Jalen Hurts was struggling offensively. The defense couldn't get Deshaun Watson off the field in the epic championship game. What do you expect this year from this Alabama team? Have they improved on the defensive side of the ball? And then what do you expect from Jalen Hurts in year two?
I think they're probably going to be better offensively, at least early. They lost so many players really over a two-year span on the front seven defensively. I think secondary is going to be good, better than last year because they got more depth than last year. But you can't lose that many defensive linemen who are starting in the NFL and that many linebackers who are starting in the NFL and just keep plugging in the next guy. The next guy may one day be starting in the NFL, but they haven't. The ones that played in the two deep over the last 2 years are mostly gone. So you've got a lot of talent. You got 4- and 5-star talent and guys who can run like deer and, you know, tackle like bulldozers, but they haven't done it. And the mental part of it and the reaction part of it where it's automatic is going to take a little time. Now, I don't think that means they're not going to be good on defense all year. I think early they're going to have to develop some of that up front. Offensively, I think they're absolutely loaded. You've got 5 really good running backs. You're going to have a very good offensive line. You got a quarterback who, yes, kind of hit a little bit of a wall last year, but he was a true freshman. And I think some of that was physical of just going through. You know, yeah, he never got hurt, but he got hit because he ran the ball. And I think what we saw in the spring, he certainly seems more comfortable in the pocket. Not that he's going to be Tom Brady, but that he's going to be more effective in that, and they're not going to be afraid to throw across the middle of the field and stuff like that, which I think they protected him from. I think you're going to see him improve, and he's still got the legs to make plays. And then I think you might have the best group of wideouts they've had at Alabama, not the best single wideout. There may not be a Julio. There may not be an Amari Cooper, but when you get to the third and the fourth and the fifth guy, watch out.
Is there some relief that Lane Kiffin's gone, the distraction that sometimes was Lane Kiffin?
On Nick Saban's part, probably so. On my part, God, I miss that man. he was good copy. And you know what? Also, just as a guy who's covered football for more than 3 decades now at this level, watching him put game plans together and watching them against Tennessee and run one offense and 2 weeks later after an open date against LSU look completely different. You know, all this matchup stuff. You know, there was that time when they beat Tennessee, I guess his first year as coordinator too. And he told Blake Sims on Thursday, this is the first play we're going to run, and it's going to be a touchdown. And it's a 79-yard touchdown pass, and it's one of those where he threw up the hands up and the touchdown signal, not when he let go of the ball, when the ball got snapped, because he knew the matchup was there, and it was an instant touchdown. I'm going to miss that Lane Kiffin.
Nick Saban won't.
Not at all. Not at all. But I'll tell you, I'll say this. It hasn't been talked about a lot. I'm interested to see what comes up this week at SEC Media Days. I haven't heard a lot of criticism of Nick Saban for canning an offensive coordinator and play caller a week basically before a national championship game. And very easily that could be the difference between them winning and losing. And nobody mentions it.
It's amazing. It very likely cost them a national championship.
I think you can certainly make the case. We'll never know, of course.
Right.
But, you know, the offense didn't look great against Washington, but it was also Washington, which had a top 3 or 4 defense in the country. and some matchup problems they gave Alabama because they were pretty stout up front. But, yeah, I think there was some hubris there. I think Nick Saban thought he could get away with that because he's Nick Saban. And I haven't heard a lot of criticism, but I really think that we're going to hear some of that as it goes on. And now there are two coordinators removed. Of course, Sarkisian was a one and done, although that wasn't the intention. He's with the Falcons now. So I'm interested to see what Ron Dable comes up with what Alabama fans like calling run the ball, Brian Dable. But anyway, they're convinced that's his name. Yeah. Run the damn ball, Lane, is words I'll miss hearing.
All right, last thing. If I know both of us think Alabama wins the West, obviously. If the football gods came down and told us today that it's not Alabama in Atlanta in December, who do you think it is?
On the West side, I guess it would be Auburn. That's just kind of what everybody's saying. I'm not 100% convinced of that, but I'm more convinced of that than I'm convinced LSU, which has also lost a ton of talent to the NFL and undergoing some offensive and defensive changes, probably isn't quite there, although I think they will be because I think they're recruiting, if I look over a 4 or 5 year period, it's way ahead of where Auburn's been lately.
And in the East, is it Kirby Smart or bust now, or are you still buy Florida?
I'm buying Florida until somebody does something different. Now, I think for one thing, I think Jim McElwain's a very good coach because he's done that twice with no quarterback play. You know, they come in with Luke Del Rio, who's a fifth string quarterback at Alabama, walk on guy, and still, managed to get, even though he got hurt later, managed to get to Atlanta. I think they're going to have they certainly got more candidates to get quarterback now, and I think they'll probably have better quarterback play. But I just think their defense is really what it comes down to. I'm not buying Kirby Smart right now. I think maybe he'll get them there, but he needs a few more recruiting cycles, and he's probably got to grow into the role as head coach a little more. Everybody does. There's a learning curve there. I don't think Ole Miss is what they were a few years ago. They're just not as many playmakers. Mississippi State, just go down the line. I'm sorry, I've switched sides, but Tennessee had their shot, and I don't think they're going to be very good this year. South Carolina's not close. Kentucky will be better than people usually expect them to be, but they're not contenders. So the East, I mean, who really cares?
Yeah, and it's full circle to what you said. The league's not good.
Yeah.
We spend all this time trying to – not we, but the league, and it doesn't – it's supposed to hype it. I get it. But they hype it as it's this dominant top-to-bottom league, and there's been years when it was. The last couple has not been the case.
No, go back to our first question, which is Alabama is the dominant team in the SEC, and I would be much more shocked if Alabama lost the SEC than I would if they lost Florida State in the opener.
Well, Tommy, appreciate the time. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, look forward to it.
Guests join the Oxford Exxon podcast via the Rebel Locker Room hotline. The Rebel Locker Room is on West Jackson Avenue in Oxford. It's the place to go to get all of your officially licensed Ole Miss gear. All the colors, all the styles, everything you need to get ready for the coming football season and more is right there at the Rebel Locker Room. Ole Miss football season tickets, Ole Miss men's basketball season tickets available at olemisstix.com. That's olemisstix.com. The podcast is also brought to you by Gambrell & Associates. Gambrell & Associates have three attorneys with more than 60 years of combined experience and more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their website at msbnkr.com or by searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. Gambrell & Associates handles Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, call the office in Hernando, 662-342-7700, or in Oxford, 662-281-8800. The podcast also brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been serving Oxford and the surrounding area for the past 26 years. I've used Comer for air conditioning repair, and you can take my word for it. Their attention to detail, their customer service, and their work is second to none. Comer is an American Standard dealer, but they work on any maker model, residential or commercial. Customers get same-day service, free estimates on new units, and preventative maintenance contracts. Visit their website, comerheatingandair.com, or check out their Facebook page. Mention you heard about them on the podcast, and you get $20 off. Contact Eric at 662-934-3846 or Shane, 662-832-8749. Podcast also brought to you by Michael Oswald. He's a realtor, specializes in recreational and timberland tracts across the state of Mississippi. He works with Tom Smith Land and Homes. It's by far the largest broker of land in our state. Michael's from the Delta, lives in Jackson, regularly visits his family in Lafayette County, so he completely understands the recreational and timberland tract in Mississippi better than anyone. Look him up on his site. It's gotland.com, got-land.com. You can read his recent testimonials. You can check out his track record. You can see the properties he has listed. But know this, the land market is very hot right now. If you're on the fence about selling your land, your hunting club share, or your home with acreage, now's the time. Give Michael a call today. He's ready to meet with you, explain the process. And if he can't earn your business in that meeting, he says he doesn't deserve it. Give him a call on his cell, 662-719-3967. Visit his Facebook page or send him an email, michael@tomsmithland.com.
Ron Higgins of NOLA Media Group joins us here in Hoover, LSU today. It's the return of Ed Orgeron, his first SEC Media Days appearance in 10 years. Did you imagine 10 years ago you'd ever see him back at the podium?
I would imagine at the podium, and I'm covering him even more so. No, I really didn't. 10 years have passed. He's a different guy. He had to become different. He was a terrible head football coach at Ole Miss, and he'll be the first to tell you that. He'll be the first to tell you every mistake he made, too. And he'll be the first to say, I've corrected all those. And he has. He no longer is the screaming, raving lunatic. He no longer tries to micromanage everything. He no longer doesn't know how to manage a game. He knows all those things. He allows his coaches to coach. He manages games well. Last year, I understand maybe they didn't get that guy they really wanted and went to Texas. They didn't get him. Jimbo wasn't in play. But maybe they got a guy that might fit him, who has made all his mistakes and understands it. So that's the interesting part. To see, last year he kind of won the audition, and he was really good. Kind of won the audition, so we'll see what happens now that he has a job. But I think he'll do well. He's just got a new offensive coordinator who's dynamite.
I'll get to that in a second because I want to talk about Matt Canada. But Tom Herman, now that it's – before we put it to bed completely, could LSU have gotten Tom Herman? Did the administration there panic? What happened to make that go south, or was it always going to be Texas if Texas was there?
I think LSU thought that Herman was trying to string him along, and they just cut it off short without going any further. Early that Saturday morning, I think, way, way early, probably 5 or 6 o'clock the Saturday after Thanksgiving, LSU beat A&M Thanksgiving. Aliva talked to Orgeron Friday, and then they were still dealing with Herman. I think Aliva just came to the point where, they're not responding. I think he's triggering us along. I'm hiring my guy. I'm going to hire this guy and go with it. So maybe they've been more patient. Maybe they could have gotten Herman, but we'll never know.
You mentioned Matt Canada and LSU's offense. How different do you expect it to be?
Vastly different. This isn't the Les Miles hand the ball off almost on every down and out of an eye formation and do something really fancy like a reverse. This guy moves people all over the place. He describes it as a simple offense that looks complicated. He uses the playbook isn't huge, he said, but they run out of so many formations and looks. They're constantly shifting, moving people around. One play in the spring game, the guy went in motion and changed direction 4 times. It looked like a shooting gallery. It went right, and he came back left. They went back right. The guy's running back and forth, the defense trailing. Which way is he going? He does a lot of things to screw with the defense. And he knows, and he's played all kinds of offenses, so he can suit it to the quarterbacks he has. The offensive people I've talked to, especially Darius Geis, who's here today, DJ Chark, receiver, they love it because they get the ball in a lot of different ways. And one of the things, hallmarks of Canada's offense, wherever he's been, is get the ball to a lot of different people.
You talk about quarterbacks. Obviously, that brings me to Danny Etling, who was up and down last year. At times, he did not look like an SEC quarterback. At times, he looked promising. What do you expect from him? And is it safe to say that this team kind of goes as far as he can take it?
Yeah, I'd say so. And I think he'll have a really good year. Danny it was revealed after spring practice, was hurt all last year with a back problem, and he finally had surgery after spring practice because he didn't want to miss spring and miss offense. I saw him about a month ago in Destin. He's part of the SEC Student Advisory Board at this business meetings. And he said this is the best his back has felt since he's been in college. And you have to understand, he played at Purdue his first 2 years and got sacked like 45 times in 2 years. And it's the healthiest he's ever been. And he said, you know, last year I was hurting so bad. I changed my passing motion and I looked awful. And this summer all I'm doing is working getting my passing motion back because I compensated because of my back and the pain I had. So he goes, a lot of passes I missed were simply because I didn't have good mechanics because I was hurting. And he goes, I want to correct that. I think he'll have a good season. I really do. And I'm looking forward to watching Darius Geis as a full-time star. He is a stud. I mean, I like him probably as much or more than Fournette.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I talked to Myles Garrett last year at ESPN College Awards. I said, who do you like better as a back, Garnett or Fournette? Geis or Fournette? He goes, well, you know, Geis. I said, why? He goes, well, Fournette, when he gets a handoff, he's going to come right at you. He knows he's coming at you. He's not going to do anything. I mean, that's where he's committed. He said, Geis can run right up to your face and stop an inch from your face mask and then cut, and you're diving in the air. And he said, plus, he just doesn't go down. It's hard to get him down. They try to get Geis in different ways, balled in different ways this year. And I think if Geis stays healthy, I really think he'll have just, he might break a Fournette single season rushing record. He's a hell of a back and has been for the past 2 years, even when he was a freshman. And even Fournette's great year, he'd have games where he'd come in with 10 carries, get 100 something yards. Great back.
LSU lost a lot of players to the NFL, a lot of guys off that defense. What do you expect on that side of the ball? And is there enough talent on that roster? If Etling plays well, if you're right about guys, is there enough talent to contend in the West?
Yeah, I mean, I think they can contend, but I think I was talking to Mike Bianchi to learn his Sentinel. It's like, it's Alabama, and it's like everybody else. And it was that way that last year, and I think it's this way this year. Alabama's is still on another level than everybody because of the way Nick recruits, the way he develops players, and everybody else is just trying to get in the ballpark with him. But one thing Orgeron realized, somebody asked him, how you beat Alabama? And the first thing he says, well, you go out and get as many fast players as they have. Well, that's true.
He's right.
Yeah. But if you can't do that, if you get some of them, then you got to throw something different at them, which is what Hugh did. Upset the tempo. And so I think that's one reason why they got Canada, because Canada's basic thinking is, I don't want to ever have the defense to just sit there and just stand and know what's coming. I want them moving the whole time. And for LSU, the standard is to beat Alabama, but they've got five SEC road games because of they have to play Florida 2 years in a row because last year was rescheduling. I don't think any SEC team's ever played five road games, and they're not easy road games. I mean, all of them are tough road games. They're at State, they're at Ole Miss, at Florida, at Tennessee, at Alabama. So, if they go 8-4 around there, 9-3 would be unbelievable. But defensively, they lost a lot in the back with Jamal Adams and Dravis White, two first-round draft choices. They may play a freshman five-star safety who's really, really good. They got a linebacker named Devin White, who's a sophomore, 250 something, can fly. And the Argentine's coming off shoulder surgery, but they say he'll be ready for the season. They may be not as good on defense as they were last year, but close to it.
We saw Greg Sankey a minute ago just saying hello. I sense there's a lot of animosity right now and kind of in Baton Rouge towards Florida. The Florida just made LSU the homecoming game, which I think was taken as a little bit of a slap in the face. Now that that's over, was that deal handled at all correctly? And what is the level of animosity between the two programs as they prepare to play again?
Well, LSU doesn't like Florida, and Florida like LSU. It goes down to the fan base. And the whole thing last year was this, and I backed LSU up on it. LSU offered on the Monday before the hurricane even came in on Saturday, or they missed Gainesville. that offered on Monday to either move me into Baton Rouge, or they would pay for Florida's travel to come there, or they would fly in on Saturday or Sunday, on day of game and play, and then fly back out in case the hotels were needed. They offered this all week. Florida kept stalling and stalling and stalling and stalling. And finally, and Sankey didn't have the authority, as crazy as it sounds, to say, we're going to play, this is where we're going to play. It got 48 hours for a kickoff and canceled it. And everybody pointed at LSU and said, it's your fault. LSU's like, we offered all week. We offered all week. And so don't, and I wrote a column basically how I thought that Florida kind of slow played, suckered Sankey and slow played them all week. Then LSU was like, they're trying to force LSU to give up a home game to play that date. And LSU's like, and that's your problem, it's not ours. You schedule whatever you want, you schedule it, but we're not giving up a home game. So they gave up South Alabama, but they put Florida in that place. But there's animosity for sure. The players don't like each other. The fans don't like each other. There's a lot of people, fans in the SEC, don't like Florida fans.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people. But, and almost that's more of a rivalry for LSU now than Alabama, because I always look at rivalries like this. If you can't ever beat them, it's not a rivalry. But if you every other year you trade victories or whatever, then it's a rivalry. I mean, people, so this is a real rivalry. So it'll be spicy, really spicy.
Last thing as we go, getting ready to walk in and hear the commissioner's state of the league speech. A lot of angst in Mississippi about the immunity interviews and that kind of thing with the NCAA. Leo Lewis, obviously a major star, if you will, of the second NOA. You've covered this league a long time. You've probably followed this from afar a little bit. What have been your thoughts on how this thing has unfolded to this point in Oxford?
Well, it's like almost every couple of months, something new pops up. There's a new angle, you know, with the clothing store and the lawsuits, and it goes on and on. All I know is this, if a school hires Mike Glazier to defend them, and which Ole Miss did, then they know it's serious and they're trying to get the best there is. You know, Mike Glazier started the business a long time ago with Mike Slive. They were the original defenders of people under investigation, and Slive went into administration. Glazier did what he did. You know, I don't know how much more they're going to get hit with, but they're going to get hit with something more. I think the NCAA is through with them. You know, I think they'll probably take more scholarships away. I don't know what else you can do to take more scholarships. You know, you can't. They don't want to ban them from bowls for 2 or 3 years. They don't want to do that because that's revenue the league loses.
Around the league and around the country, do you think people will look at this, the whole immunity interview of a rival player, and say, hey, this might not be the way we want this to do, or is this just a part of the way that the business has to unfold?
I think people look at, you know, like, they're really doing this, but they've done this forever. You know, they find somebody to rat on somebody, you know, even if it's an opposing player, that's how the NCAA does business. Because nobody wants to talk to the NCAA. Nobody wants to talk to the NCAA. They don't want to talk to the NCAA. They don't think the NCAA is fair. And I kind of agree, I don't think the NCAA is fair either. But, you know, that's how they get people. They find people who have a reason to talk, who want to turn somebody in, and they give them immunity. That's how the NCAA operates, because nobody wants to talk to them.
Last thing, Alabama wins the West again, wins the league?
Yep. They're far ahead of everybody else still. Doesn't really matter. They'll throw in some new parts and move on. East, every year I pick Georgia, let me down, but I'm going to pick Georgia again this year. I think they got enough all over the place to get it done.
Ron, thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
Always. And to all my friends in Oxford, hello.
Let's take one more quick break to tell you about Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga. 30 years old this year, one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All underwriting and processing is done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. Also, the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. Ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's flow-down option. This allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. You can contact him 662-234-2704. Or JLowe, that's LOWE, at communitymtg.com.
The podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. Why does that matter? Well, when you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. Oxford University Bank gives you all the comfort of home and all of the benefits the big mega banks provide. All the technology and products you want, but with the personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with the live person, all without having to press 10 buttons and without a 5-minute wait.
OUB offers its customers the absolute best cash checking account. It's called Kasasa. And with Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000. With Kasasa, ATM fees nationwide are refunded. OUB also offers online bill pay and mobile check deposit using its online app. OUB is offering one-year CDs at 1.75% annual percentage yield and three-year triple option CDs paying 2.01% APY. With the three-year term, customers can deposit once during the term, withdraw once during the term, and or bump the rate if OUB's three-year rate rises. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. Oxford University Bank is FDIC insured. Now back to the show.
Mike Strange of the Knoxville News Sentinel joins us here on the podcast. Mike, retiring at the end of the month, 34 years in Knoxville at the News Sentinel. Not too many people can pull that off anymore.
Yeah, I look around this room here at SEC Media Days, and I don't see a whole lot of people that predated me. A few of us dinosaurs left, yeah, but I'll be getting out of here in a couple of weeks.
What do you have planned?
Not much. I may be an Uber driver. If you come to Tennessee's home opener against Indiana State, I might be your Uber driver.
What is that going to be like for you on a Saturday afternoon, Saturday night, not to have a college football game to cover after all of these years?
Well, it's going to be a lot less stressful, I guess. But I love covering games. That's been the thing I've probably liked most about my job, is actually going to a game, whether it's football, basketball, track meet, whatever. So it's going to be a real adjustment.
People talk about media accessibility and all that stuff. How much has it changed from, say, 30 years ago to today?
Well, not just 30 years ago. I would go from 10 years ago to today. It's changed so much, or 15 years ago at least. We used to go to, whether it was football practice or basketball practice, you'd go and sit there and watch the entire practice. And as you know, it's the window has shrunk and shrunk and shrunk, so there's very little access right now.
Let's talk a little bit about the Vols, the atmosphere in Knoxville. There was so much high hopes last season for that team with Butch Jones, and he didn't do anything to really pour cold water on it, and then they underachieved, obviously. What's the fallout been like since then?
Well, there was a missed opportunity for certain. They did the hard part. They beat Georgia, they beat Florida, and then they tripped over South Carolina and then tripped again over Vanderbilt at the end. Very disappointed, and I think everybody knew that that was kind of their shot, because this year they've got a lot of people to replace, and this year I think is going to be kind of a treading water, trying not to backpedal. And then maybe, you know, if you get through this year, then you're looking at where 2018 will be good again. But there's a lot of disappointment and frustration with finally that chance to get back and be what they, you know, thought Tennessee ought to be, and they missed it.
That fan base, obviously, hunger for them to be a national power again. Are they willing to take a step back as a fan base?
No, I don't think fan bases are ever willing to take a step back. It's whether they can be realistic or not. And I think it's hard for fan bases to even be realistic. But like you said, the SEC East has been there for them to win the last couple of years, really. And they didn't. And Florida, without typical Florida teams, has been able to, you know, win the East the last 2 years. So that's even more frustrating for Tennessee fans, because they realized the East hadn't been all that great and that they couldn't take advantage of it.
Butch made the comments at the end of last season about life champions and all of that stuff. I'm sure that many people took them and went running with them somewhat out of context. In hindsight, what was he trying to say, and why did he kind of double down on it?
Well, I think he was trying to pay the guys a tribute that, you know, there's more than football, and that they're basically good guys and they've worked hard and learned lessons and all that. But it just came at the wrong time. It was pretty much right after Tennessee had been eliminated from winning the SEC East, and it kind of came up in that it was more the timing than anything, that it came right after they had been mathematically eliminated from winning the East. So, you know, I think if if Butch had won the East last year, he could have said whatever he wanted, and, sure. and nobody would have, you know, pounced on it like they did.
When you look at the SEC East this year, does it look like Georgia's? This is kind of there and where Tennessee was a year ago, where it's their division to win.
Well, it might be, but I'm going with Florida. I think Florida's won it the last 2 years with not really great teams, and I just think in Jim McElwain's third year, Florida should be better than they have been the last couple of years. So maybe it's just me, but I'm going with them over Georgia.
Best player you covered in 3 decades?
Well, I would go with Peyton Manning on offense and Eric Berry on defense.
When you look back at Peyton's time in Knoxville, can you imagine that being matched anywhere?
No, it was he was, you know, as everybody probably knows by now, they're probably sick of Peyton Manning, but he was such a special guy from a freshman on. You could tell that there was just something about him, and of course he had great players around him in those days too. But I don't think there's been anyone, or maybe never will be anyone, the Tennessee fans will embrace the way they have him.
I'm glad I got to catch up with you here in your final SEC media days. I would suspect this is something you won't miss next. Maybe by next year it'll be in June.
Not a lot. I'd rather be at a ball game, Neil. I'll miss the ball games.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
Okay, sure.